The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Brandy Spergata for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Varied historical homicides, your thrillers, your blood-racing mysteries, your criminal justice commentaries, your amateur sleuthing call-ins, your serial host-like investigative heroes, your hardened detective heartthrobs, and each is tempting in its own way. But if you go into a must-test-this, must-try-that rabbit hole for too long, you won't be tuning into anything on your painfully clogged commute. Podcast paralysis should never be faced alone, which is why we've pre-screened 20 of the best 2022 true crime podcasts for your binge-listening pleasure. As with pod-turned drama Dirty John, several stories chronicled here were so nuts they became TV shows, including the Peacock series Dr. Death, starring Joshua Jackson as the murderous physician, Apple's The Shrink Next Door, which features Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd, and Netflix's docuseries Tiger King. This jaw-dropping group promises plenty of gasps, sobs, and uncanny conversations around the office water cooler. In other words, we know what you're listening to soon. Number one, Over My Dead Body, Fox Lake. Host Matt Baglio. Each season of Over My Dead Body is a deep dive into a different case. The first was about Tiger King's Joe Exotic. The third focuses on yet another Joe, this time a small-town police officer nicknamed G.I. Joe. After Joe, G.I. Joe Glinowitz, was found dead in Illinois in 2015, his story became the subject of national media scrutiny. It looked like a murder, but not all is what it seems in the story. Number two, My Favorite Murder, hosts Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark. Since its inception in January 2016, this wildly successful and popular podcast has broken global download records and spawned a community of listeners lovingly known as Murderinos. The ladies of MFM look at true crime cases from recent times through to 100 years ago, as well as survival and disaster stories. Their dedication to victim support, women's rights, LGBTQA+, people of color, and frank discussion of mental health and addiction has earned them a dedicated fan base. Number three, Black Girl Gone, host Amara Kofer. Black Girl Gone True Crime Podcast focuses on telling the stories of missing and murdered Black women and women of color in America. This show shines a light on cases that often receive little to no attention from the mainstream media, making this powerful podcast both important and poignant. Host Amara Kofer tells the stories of the victims and families with compassion, while always striving to bring awareness to the crimes that claim their lives. Number four, Dr. Death, host Laura Beale. You've been warned, Dr. Death is not for the squeamish, but it's quite a story, one that doubles as an indictment of the American medical system. How did Dallas-based neurosurgeon Christopher Dunch maim, paralyze, and even kill patients in a series of botched spinal surgeries before he was stopped? Journalist Laura Beale unfurls the story in season one. After you listen, check out Peacock's scripted series starring Alec Baldwin, Christian Slater, and Joshua Jackson as Dr. Dunch. Number five, The Clearing, host Josh Dean. April Belasio was 40 years old when she learned that her father, Edward Wayne Edwards, murdered multiple people, but she'd had a sinking suspicion dating back to her nomadic, tumultuous childhood. The Clearing shakes up the True Crime Pod's traditional format. Investigative journalist Josh Dean works together with Belasio to piece together her past and figure out who else the enigmatic Edwards may have killed. Number six, Over My Dead Body, Joe Exotic, host Matt Scheer. From the same studio that produced the hit podcast Dirty John comes Over My Dead Body, a gripping show about people being pushed to their limits. In the second season, a zookeeper tiger breeder takes out a hit on his rival, a woman who runs a big cat sanctuary. The same story is explored in the hit Netflix show Tiger King. Number seven, Uncover the Village, host Justin Ling. 9 engrossing serial-esque episodes examining the horrible rash of violence in Toronto's LGBTQ community faced over the past 12 years at the hands of serial killer Bruce MacArthur and police's lackluster response to the murders. Ling not only frequently passes the mic to victims' friends and families, prioritizing healing storytelling as much as grisly detail sharing, but also peers into the past to ask a chilling question. Could MacArthur be involved in other cold cases dating back to the 1970s? Number 8, Killer Psyche, host Candace DeLong. When a heinous crime takes place, people often ask why. Was it jealousy, revenge, money, or something else? This is where Killer Psyche's Candace DeLong comes in. She uses her decades of firsthand experience as a psychiatric nurse and an FBI criminal profiler to delve into the minds of killers. Through analysis and research, DeLong explores the murderer's background and discusses what events and relationships may have shaped their psyche, leading them to commit crimes. If you're a fan of Netflix's Mindhunter and are fascinated with psychology and what drives people, then this podcast is for you. Number 9, The Dropout, host Rebecca Jarvis. A clear-eyed glimpse into the carefully fabricated, dangerously ambitious, deep-voiced, and utterly scamalicious world of Elizabeth Holmes, founder of now-defunct health technology behemoth Theranos. The Shakespearean 9 billion-sized downfall unfolds via interviews with company whistleblowers, former professors, even the lawyer for Holmes' one-time business partner and secret lover, Sunny Balwani. Number 10, White Lies, hosts Andrew Beck Grace and Chip Brantley. An NPR-produced show examining the still unsolved murder of Reverend James Reeb, a white Unitarian minister killed in 1965 after sojourning to Selma, Alabama to contribute to the civil rights fight. Reeb's death received national attention and was cited by President Lyndon B. Johnson when he signed the Voting Rights Act, but its personal and historic repercussions have largely faded from memory. Until now. Number 11, Tenfold More Wicked, host Kate Winkler-Dawson. Take a horrifying trip through history with spine-tingling tales of true crime and mystery. Hosted by Kate Winkler-Dawson, a lecturer at UT Austin, Tenfold More Wicked is a unique blend of narrative nonfiction storytelling with investigative journalism, a deep dive into the lives of victims and killers, and how they made history. Everything from Civil War time family feuds through to Jazz Age flapper murders is explored, often with interviews of relatives and living descendants of those affected by the crimes. If you relish good storytelling, journalism, and mystery like that of Dateline or 48 Hour Mysteries, then this podcast will hold you firmly in its chilling grip. Number 12, Charged, host Emily Bazelon. An in-depth 6-episode investigation tackling criminal justice, mass incarceration, the seemingly untouchable Second Amendment, and misguided gun reform efforts filtered through the harrowing experiences of the overwhelmingly young, black, and male defendants caught up, even ensnared, in New York City's so-called gun court, designed to speedily prosecute those found illegally possessing firearms. Number 13, Root of Evil, hosts Yvette Gentile and Rasha Pecoraro. Scandal, abuse, secrets, homicide. This 8-part series has all that and more. Listen as Gentile and Pecoraro bring together their fractured family to mine a twisted history, which flows forth from their great-grandfather, George Hodel, one of the prime suspects in the infamous 1947 Black Dahlia murder of actress Elizabeth Short. Produced in part by TNT, the riveting show is equal bits gruesome murder mystery and heart-wrenching personal reckoning. Number 14, Bomber, host Jason Puckett. 6 episodes exploring the 19-day bombing rampage, orchestrated by Mark Anthony Condit, that shocked and panicked the city of Austin. Listen in for intimate interviews with neighbors and survivors and teased apart answers to lingering questions, like how Condit, whose homemade explosives killed 2 Texans and injured 5 others, selected who or where to target, how law enforcement's frantic manhunt unfolded, and what drove the serial bomber to embark on a terror-laden spree. Number 15, The Murder Squad, hosts Paul Holes and Billy Jensen. An interactive series of cold case reopenings led by Holes and Jensen, who possess major investigating chops. Holes' expertise helped catch the Golden State Killer. Jensen helped finish Michelle McNamara's chilling book on the GSK, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, after her sudden death in 2016. Come for the behavioral deep dives and modern-day detective strategies. Stay for the invitation to be an amateur sleuth, seriously, per each episode's stated assignment and code of conduct. Number 16, Running from Cops, host Dan Tabersky. 6 episodes detailing an 18-month analysis of hundreds of hours of Cops episodes. Yes, that Cops. Tabersky of Missing Richard Simmons interviews reality TV producers, ex-police officers, media critics, and people captured on both sides of the jittery handheld Cops camera. He unpacks the wacky existence of a show that has had supersized influence on how millions interpret our justice system's inner workings. Number 17, Unsolved, The Devil You Know, host Gina Barton. A 10-part spine tingler about the mysterious slaying of Father Alfred Koons, who was found murdered at the Catholic church and school where he worked in Dane, Wisconsin in 1998. From Koons' strict traditionalism to alleged affairs with congregants to a close friendship with a waitress who had visions, Barton pulls at various threads of this twisty, serial-like story to try and solve a still unanswered question. Why was Koons killed? Number 18, What Happened to Holly Bartlett? Host Maggie Rohr. A stirring 6-parter that digs deep into the suspicious death of 31-year-old Holly Bartlett, a blind woman found unconscious under a bridge in Halifax in 2010. For the past 9 years, police have sworn there was never enough to suggest foul play. The case was actually ruled an accident within the first 72 hours. But family, friends, and hired private detectives insist something fishy must have gone down and are still on the hunt for new evidence. Number 19, Criminal, host Phoebe Judge. An oldie but a goodie with bi-monthly episodes featuring interviews with those who have committed a crime, been the victim of a crime, or got stuck somewhere in between. Judge's buttery smooth radio voice never fails to captivate, whether she's discussing house hauntings, illegal lotteries, the witness protection program, sex work, bank heists, seances, even a famous dog kidnapping. Number 20, The Shrink Next Door, host Joe Nocera. 6 episodes stitching together Nocera's 7-plus years of exhaustive investigative work and his one-time psychiatrist neighbor, Isaac Steven Hirschkopf. The fancy-schmancy New York City therapist hosted wild romps at his Hamptons estate, counseled and partied with celebrities, and blurred the lines between help and hurt as he took advantage of and isolated vulnerable patients. Talk about Dr. No Good. Our next article by Casey Clark is titled, How to Stop a Panic Attack, According to Therapists. I'll never forget where I was when I had my first panic attack. I woke up in the middle of the night with my heart racing, hands trembling, arms tingling, and forehead sweating profusely. I paced around my bedroom screaming because I didn't know what was going on, and it quite literally felt like I was having a heart attack. At the time, I didn't know how to stop a panic attack, so I just hoped it would subside on its own. I can't tell you specifically what triggered my panic attack, but after a few sessions with my therapist, we think it was stress-induced, thanks to my never-ending to-do list. A panic attack is a sudden emotional response of feeling terror or fear when, in reality, there is no imminent danger to the person experiencing it, says Kelly McKenna, licensed clinical social worker and anxiety therapist. According to the Cleveland Clinic, every year up to 11% of Americans experience a panic attack, so it's safe to say I'm not alone in this. The therapists I've talked to say many of their clients experience them, and it's learning how to stop a panic attack, or, well, slow one down, that is the ultimate game changer. Keep reading to find out more about how to stop a panic attack, according to therapists, and what you'll want to do next time you find yourself or a loved one in this uncomfortable situation. What does a panic attack feel like? Unless you've had a panic attack, it's pretty hard to describe exactly what it feels like, but many therapists receive similar answers when their clients come to them saying that they think they've experienced one. Some common symptoms include the heart beating very fast, physical shaking, and feeling out of reality or constricted, says McKenna. Kristen Gingrich, licensed and clinical social worker and a certified drug and alcohol counselor, Adds that some other common symptoms of a panic attack include chest pain, gastrointestinal issues, dizziness, racing thoughts, crying, or increased anger. How to stop a panic attack. If you're reading this, then you're probably interested in learning how to stop one. Well, you've come to the right place. For starters, panic attacks usually stop on their own after a few minutes, but there are some therapist-approved strategies you can use to expedite the process and relieve symptoms more quickly. Number one, know that it will pass. When you're in the middle of a panic attack, it can feel like the feelings are going to last forever. While that may seem like the case, luckily that's not true. If possible, name to yourself that you are having a panic attack. Tell yourself that these symptoms are a part of an attack that will pass, says Madeline Lucas, clinical content manager and therapist at REAL. There's cortisol, the stress hormone, and adrenaline pumping through your system at the moment, and it will settle back to normal soon. Number two, ground yourself. While in the middle of a panic attack, it can be difficult to actually realize what's going on around you, so you'll want to actively pay attention to your environment and stay grounded. Look around your space and name as many things as you can that you see. Feel your butt where you're sitting on the floor. Press your toes into the ground, says Lucas. One of my favorite techniques is butterfly tapping, where you cross your arms across your chest and engage in light, rhythmic tapping left and right. All of these steps will start to activate your parasympathetic nervous system to communicate, I am safe, I am okay. Number three, breathe deeply. You probably heard the advice to take deep breaths when you're nervous or anxious, but that's particularly important when stopping a panic attack. Paced breathing skills are all about being mindful of our breathing and utilizing timed breathing techniques that will deactivate the parasympathetic nervous system, says Gingrich. The most common breathing technique is 5-7-8. 5 seconds in, hold for 7 seconds, and out for 8 seconds, while making sure that your out breath is always the longest. Additionally, McKenna notes that the act of counting as you breathe helps to shift your focus away from the panic and towards something else, which can help slow it down. Number four, do a TIPP skill. This skill requires a bit more work than scanning your environment and breathing, but it's been proven effective in stopping panic attacks. The temperature portion of the TIPP skill, which stands for temperature, intense exercise, paced breathing, and paired muscle relaxation, can be extremely helpful when figuring out how to stop a panic attack, especially with cold temperatures. The three most common ways people use this skill is by holding an ice cube in their hands, taking an ice-cold shower, and submerging their face up to the temples into an ice water bath for 15 to 20 seconds, says Gingrich. This helps to deactivate your parasympathetic nervous system, like a fire alarm for your body, by activating your mammalian dive reflex, which automatically causes your body to slow down, shocking it back into the present moment. Number five, try muscle relaxation. When you're in a heightened state during a panic attack, you'll want to work on relaxing the muscles that are overexerting themselves. McKenna suggests starting at the toes and tensing them up for 5 seconds and then releasing. Using this same mechanism, you'll want to slowly work your way up the body, tensing and releasing the muscle groups until you feel more relaxed. Number six, see a therapist or mental health professional. You'll want to consider seeing a therapist or medical doctor to talk about what may be causing the panic attacks and coming up with a specific treatment plan. While that may include a variation of the skills mentioned above, you might find medicine helpful, something a professional can assist with as well as educate you about other treatment options. How to help others cope with a panic attack. For some people, panic attacks are a daily occurrence, and for others, they are more infrequent. Regardless of the frequency, people who experience panic attacks can benefit from having support and knowing you are there. Sitting with the person and helping them access skills they might be familiar with, like paced breathing and sensory grounding techniques, and doing them together with them can be helpful when helping a friend or loved one cope with a panic attack, says Gingrich. Additionally, you can be the voice of reason in the situation and remind them that they are safe and those feelings will pass. Sometimes hearing it from someone else can help provide a sense of reassurance. Our next article by Amy Maraskin, PhD, is titled, It's Not You, It's My OCD. Here's how breaking the news to your new flame at the outset will spare both of you heartache down the road. The foundation for romantic intimacy is getting to know each other's inner worlds. And since OCD is a core part of your world, it's worth thinking about how out in my head. But telling your partner about OCD doesn't mean unleashing a stream of consciousness of every thought, impulse, or urge you experience. It means sharing some of the things that make you unique. What you reveal about yourself doesn't have to be emotionally loaded or even particularly deep at first. It can be sharing your favorite movies, talking about how you spend your free time, and learning about each other's siblings. Over time, as intimacy deepens, sharing more vulnerable parts of your inner world becomes valuable too. After all, if a person is going to be part of your life, it's important that they're part of your whole life, or at least the biggest parts. Questions about when to disclose are among the most common that I'm asked in my therapy practice. Understandably, people want to know how to effectively reveal private and sometimes painful information in a way that will bring them closer to loved ones. And as with almost any other important conversation in life, there's no guarantee that it will go the way you planned. In this way, disclosure is a form of exposure. You must be willing to accept the risk that your partner may not react in a supportive way. If you're willing to take this risk, start by examining your motivation. There are so many reasons to share, some of which are likely to help you nurture intimacy, and some of which are more likely to nurture OCD symptoms. Ask yourself if you're disclosing out of a sense of obligation, they should know the mess they're getting into, or if I don't tell them I'm lying, or as an apology for having OCD. I'm so sorry that I messed up, and I get it if you want to leave. If it's an apology, your disclosure may be rooted in shame, embarrassment, or anxiety rather than a genuine desire to be open about yourself to strengthen your connection. Another way to approach disclosure is to see if it's what ACT, Acceptance Commitment Therapy therapists, call a toward move or an away move. Toward moves bring us closer to things that are important to us, while away moves serve to reduce anxiety, discomfort, or other unwanted emotions. A toward move would be disclosing your OCD so that your partner understands your behavior better and can support you, while an away move would serve to provide quick and temporary relief from discomfort. What fears do you notice getting in the way of disclosure? Do you have any evidence that these fears would play out based on past behavior? Notice if you find yourself ruminating on this last question, trying to get some elusive certainty. If fears are motivating your decisions, you might be engaging in an away move. Remember that you don't have to tell anyone everything about your symptoms right away. Disclosure can be offered in small bits, allowing you to retain a sense of privacy. Maybe you want to reveal that you have mental health concerns without labeling the OCD itself, or perhaps you want to talk about the symptoms that are most visible first. Providing your loved ones with resources about OCD may be helpful too. Books, blog posts, social media accounts, or websites can all enhance their understanding without putting the burden of education all on you. Again, disclosure is an exposure because you can't control the outcome, and that means being willing to accept whatever comes next after you reveal your OCD. This doesn't mean liking how it feels or approving of your partner's response, but it does mean accepting reality as it is. For example, if I were to wake up on the day of running a marathon, a purely hypothetical event, I can assure you, and discover that the weather was blustery, I could accept the cold and the rain without liking it or trying to change it. Your relationship meteorology after a disclosure may feel cooler or warmer than expected. Your partner might react with surprising calm and understanding, or they might find the disclosure difficult to process or accept. But trying to predict this accurately is like trying to predict the weather. The marathoner who wakes up on a windy, rainy day will probably run the marathon anyway, accepting the discomfort even if they don't entirely like it. Afterward, they'll know they completed it because it was worthwhile, just as you'll know that disclosure for the sake of greater intimacy is ultimately important, no matter the outcome. To prepare to disclose your OCD to someone, I suggest writing down what's important for you to say and how you'd like to say it. Here's an example. I have OCD. I wanted to tell you about it because I'd love to have your support when it's rearing up. I also wanted you to know so that when I'm struggling, you can have a context for my behavior and won't think that I'm withdrawing or getting stuck because of something you've done. I'm not ready to tell you about all my symptoms because some of them are a little tough to talk about, but I wanted to start the conversation. This example establishes boundaries around what's up for discussion, which is an avenue you might want to take. However, you tell someone, remember that disclosing your OCD is foundational for a strong relationship and that you get to set the pace. Our next article by Genesis Rivas is titled, Skin Cycling for Your Body Will Leave You Softer and Smoother Than Ever Before. Learn more about this viral skincare method and its benefits for the skin below the neck. If your body care routine consists of body wash and maybe sometimes lotion, then you're missing out on a host of active ingredients that can prevent damage and make skin below your neck smoother, softer, and brighter. With the increase in body care spending, reports show bath and body product sales were up 65% in 2020 and continue to grow. And the awareness that we want the rest of our skin to look as healthy as our faces do, brands have expanded their offerings to include exfoliants, cleansers, and hydrators with active ingredients that mirror formulas once reserved for the face. The trick to navigating all these new options and making them work most effectively is to use a method called skin cycling. Skin cycling, a viral term coined by dermatologist Whitney Bow, MD, calls for rotating your skincare products on a 4-day cycle so you use active ingredients like retinol or alpha hydroxy acid some days and only hydrating ingredients on rest days. This reduces irritation and strengthens the skin barrier, explains Morben Raybach, MD, a board-certified dermatologist. The technique isn't new, but it is a streamlined, effective, and derm-approved way to get soft, smooth skin while also targeting specific concerns. What are the benefits of skin cycling for your body? First, everyone can benefit from skin cycling. In fact, the strategy helps target specific concerns like eczema, sensitivity, or acne without irritating the skin since it has built-in recovery days, says Stacy Cimento, MD, a board-certified dermatologist. Body cycling is also ideal for mature skin. As we age, the skin becomes thinner and looks crepey, especially the upper arms and the areas above the knees. A great treatment for thin, crepey skin is a retinol cream. However, a lot of people, especially those with sensitive skin, can't tolerate using one daily. Body cycling helps you space out your retinol days, ideally making skin thicker and firmer without irritation. Exfoliating with alpha hydroxy acids or physical scrubs, with the goal of smoother, brighter skin, should also be mapped out. Overuse can dry out or irritate your skin. These formulas can help address skin conditions like keratosis pilaris, as well as excess dead, dull skin cells that accumulate on the elbows, knees, heels, and lower legs, Bo says. How to customize skin cycling to your body concerns. Skin cycling follows a 4-day cycle, exfoliating on night 1, retinol on night 2, and recovery days, meaning no active ingredients, only hydrating ones, on days 3 and 4. However, body cycling, like face cycling, is a flexible framework that you can customize to meet your skin's needs and goals, says Bo. It's all about learning to listen to your skin and then adjusting the framework as needed. Here are a few ways to customize body cycling. If you have dry, sensitive, or mature skin, first, choose the body wash and body lotion you'll use for both active days and recovery days. Make sure they contain ceramides, hyaluronic acid, or nut butters like Shea, Robux says. We love Dove Hydrating Body Wash and L'Occitane Almond Delightful Body Balm. Apply both every day, layering the body balm on top of your slightly damp skin post-shower. But if you have sensitive skin or are prone to eczema, use a soothing, fragrance-free lotion like Vaseline Intensive Care Sensitive Skin Relief instead. Then, limit yourself to one exfoliating day a week. Make sure it's a day when you aren't shaving. Cimento recommends alternating between an exfoliating lotion or wash 1 week and a retinol cream the next week. If you don't experience any irritation, then you can increase your exfoliation days, but continue to alternate between the two formulas. For oily and acne-prone skin, you will likely benefit from the classic 4-day cycle. On day 1 and day 2, reach for a body wash that exfoliates with salicylic acid, glycolic acid, or retinol, says Raybach. differ in acne-clearing body wash as salicylic acid, hyaluronic acid, and blue tansy extract to help heal existing bumps and prevent new ones from forming. This will also help treat keratosis pilaris. Then apply a lightweight body lotion like Seaweed Bath Company Melton Water Lotion. On days 3 and 4, use a hydrating body wash and your lightweight body lotion. It's just as important to support the skin barrier on our body as it is to support the skin barrier on our face to optimize the health of our skin, Bo says. Our next article by Krista Bennett DeMayo is titled, Exactly What Happens to Your Hair During Menopause? It's not your imagination. Hair can become drier, thinner, and frizzier before and during this life stage. Here, top experts explain these symptoms, plus serve up solutions for a smoother, thicker, and shinier transition. The change doesn't happen all at once. In fact, you'll likely start to notice smaller shifts during a phase called perimenopause, which can be quite the hormonal roller coaster. For the 8 to 10 years preceding menopause, hormone levels rise and fall and rise and fall. It can be confusing. Was that a hot flash, or is it warm in here? Do I have insomnia, or did I drink my latte too late? Is my period gone for good, or just a few months? And surprisingly, you can add this one to your list of questionable symptoms. Is it just a bad hair day, or is it my hormones? Yep, your hair is among the many things your hormones can alter during both the perimenopausal and postmenopausal years. The hormones involved, mainly estrogen and progesterone, affect your hair's growth cycles, your scalp and follicle health, and the natural oils that keep hair smooth and lustrous. Because of that, you may experience thinning, lack of density, texture changes, and dryness as estrogen wanes. But again, it's not a linear process. During perimenopause, it isn't that your estrogen is gone, it's fluctuating, says Deborah Lynn, PhD, hair science expert and chief scientific officer at Better Not Younger, a hair care brand. So sometimes your hair may look thicker and healthier, other times it may be thinner and duller, she says. When your menstrual cycle has stopped for an entire year, you're officially in menopause, and those less desirable hair changes may be permanent. To get to the root of these hormonal hair shifts, we asked experts, some of whom who have experienced these changes firsthand, to break down exactly what's happening and recommend ways to combat it. Thinning. If your ponytail feels lighter these days, you're not alone. A recent study in the journal Menopause found that more than half of the nearly 200 postmenopausal women studied had experienced female pattern hair loss. As estrogen starts to decline, the delicate balance between estrogen and the hormone DHT, which is responsible for masculinizing changes such as hair loss, gets disrupted, says Audrey Coonan, MD, a dermatologist in Kansas City, Missouri, and founder of Dermadoctor, a skincare brand. Women who have a genetic predisposition to hair thinning may begin to see an increase in hair loss. I've seen my hairline recede, a telltale sign of hormonal hair loss, says Coonan. Low estrogen levels can also affect your hair growth cycle, shortening the growth phase and delaying the stage when the hair regrows, says Lynn. Your hair follicles also miniaturize with age, so the strands coming out of them are finer, resulting in an overall lack of density. Dry, dull strands. While she hasn't noticed significant shedding, Ellen Marmer, MD, a dermatologist in New York City and founder of MM Skincare, has seen changes in her scalp and strand quality while in perimenopause. My hair and scalp feel more fragile, she says. Just as your skin gets dry as estrogen is on the decline, your scalp and, by extension, your hair strands lack hydration too. A reduction in estrogen results in reduced sebum oil production, which normally lubricates the scalp. The result is dry skin and a flaky scalp, says Coonan. And since that hydrating scalp oil isn't there to work itself down your strands, hair is also drier, as well as duller, more brittle, and breakage-prone. Scalp sensitivity. Dryness can make a scalp cranky. The skin's barrier, the outermost layer, forms tiny cracks when it's dry, which allows irritants to get into it and cause inflammation. Plus, if you're experiencing thinning, then your scalp is more exposed to environmental aggressors, such as UV rays, and harsh ingredients. This leads to more inflammation, says Lynn. Texture changes. You may find that your hair feels wirier or it's suddenly curly in the back and you have two textures on one head, says Caitlin Ellsworth, owner of the Roslyn Salon in San Diego. Hormones can affect the shape of some hair follicles, changing them from, say, circle-shaped follicles that produce straight hair to oval-shaped follicles that produce curly hair. The coarse, wiry feel of some strands stems from the lack of natural oils. Sebum helps to maintain hair's pH in a healthy acidic range. Acidic hair cuticle cells lying tightly against each other like shingles on a roof, says Koonin. But less sebum throws the pH balance off kilter. Without the acidity, the cuticle cells begin to lift up and pull apart, leaving hair looking dull and feeling rough, she says. Your menopause hair plan. Hormone replacement is one way to stave off the changes in your hair and the rest of your body, so speak to your doctor to see if this is an option for you. You can also consider these topical treatments, supplements, and styling tips. Stimulate growth. Topical treatments can help keep hair in the growth phase longer. If you're losing more than 100 hairs per day, using a product with 5% topical minoxidil for women can help reduce the rate of hair loss, Koonin says. Research has also put a spotlight on LED therapy, in particular red light. A study in the Annals of Dermatology found that red light stimulated growth and reversed the miniaturization of the follicle. Marmer says research has also suggested that a pulsed red light setting is optimal for follicular stimulation. She recommends doing 4 20-minute sessions a week. Incorporate scalp care into your routine. Caring for your scalp leads to healthier hair, says Lynn. Keeping it clean, reducing buildup, and conditioning, it will help reduce inflammation and support the follicles. Scalp serums provide lightweight hydration that won't clog follicles or leave roots greasy, and also moisturize hair. Look for one that has collagen-stimulating ingredients, such as niacinamide, barrier-supporting lipids, such as ceramides, and agents that wake up groggy follicles, such as caffeine. Plump up. The products you use can temporarily thicken the diameter of your hair shaft, making the hair you do have feel fuller. Look for thickening shampoos and treatments that include biotin, hydrolyzed wheat or rice proteins, and kaolin clay, says Ellsworth. Tame texture. At-home smoothing treatments and deep conditioners packed with nourishing oils such as coconut and avocado can soften coarse, brittle strands and help calm frizz, which stems from dehydration. But if you have really unruly hair, Ellsworth suggests an in-salon keratin treatment, which seals the cuticle layer. It's going to make your hair more manageable and easier to blow out at home, she says. Try a hair supplement. Vivascal and Nutrafol are very popular with my patients, says Marmer. There is only anecdotal evidence that these home supplements work, but I still believe in trying a holistic approach to improving your hair, she says. And the proper amounts of vitamins and minerals will help optimize hair growth and health. Look for blends containing vitamins A and C, B vitamins such as folic acid and biotin, and minerals including zinc and silica. Our next article by Lee Newman, Marion Winnick, Charlie Burlock, and Valeria Tiskova is titled, Your Spring Reading List is Here. Now is the time to stock up on the freshest, most delectable books of the year. Spring has arrived, and with it a glimpse of sunshine that invites you to enjoy some much-needed relaxation. We've compiled a list for you of unforgettable novels written by unforgettable women, thrillers that chill, smart love stories, memoirs too powerful to put down, and sagas that sweep you away. Read them in the backyard, read them on the back deck, or just read them under the covers instead of getting to work in your flower bed. Dances by Nicole Cuffey. A striking debut that centers on Cece Cordell, a Black rising star of the New York City Ballet, as she questions whether she will ever find fulfillment within the stern, ultra-white fortress of classical dance. Cuffey's prose pours into Cece, head, heart, and body, and creates a moving portrait of an artist seeking to know herself and stretch the boundaries of her craft. The Five-Star Weekend by Ellen Hildebrand. Hungry with Hollis is one of the internet's hottest sites, but when Hollis's husband dies in a car crash, her peppy posting flags. To cheer herself up, she curates a perfect house party with five close friends. Well, four close friends and one follower she's made a special connection with. Wait till she finds out just how special their connection is. If you aren't already addicted to Hildebrand's Nantucket novels, there's no time like the present. Hedge by Jane DeLurie. Maud travels to New York's Hudson Valley for a summer of hard work, restoring the ruins of a 19th century garden and relinquishing her crumbling marriage. She is not expecting to meet Gabriel, a charming archaeologist who becomes entangled in her life and the life of her troubled tween-age daughter. With language as lush as the setting, DeLurie pulls readers into a thicket of lust, responsibility, and betrayal that they won't want to escape. Pieces of Blue by Holly Goldberg Sloan. Left alone with three children and a life insurance payout from her husband's sudden death, Lindsay Hill impulse buys a rundown motel on a stretch of pristine Hawaiian coast. The Hills must rapidly adjust to the new geography, both of the small, sun-soaked town and of their newly cleaved family. Bursting with humor, chaos, and raw tenderness, Sloan's portrait of grief is as refreshing as it is unflinching. My Husband by Maud Ventura. In this wry, psychologically complex debut, a meticulously manicured wife is obsessed with her husband. For the past 13 years, she's made a science of meeting his needs, putting them before her own or even their children's. Her love is a stranglehold. Something's got to give. The winner of France's first novel prize, this riveting emotional thriller requires serious willpower to not devour in a single setting. The Guest by Emma Klein. In this dark summer's tale by the author of The Girls, a 22-year-old call girl named Alex lucks into a relationship with a civilian who invites her to spend August at his house in Long Island. When she crosses a line and he kicks her out, she drifts and grifts her way for another week, playing one person after another with her uncanny ability to seem like one of us. But her mistakes pile up and her plan has a major flaw. Beware the Woman by Megan Abbott. On Michigan's remote Upper Peninsula, JC32 is feeling uneasy. Are her new husband, her father-in-law, and their friends being oddly overprotective of her pregnancy? Almost as if they don't see her body as hers. Are they plotting something? With this bewitchingly creepy tale, thriller queen Megan Abbott keeps readers questioning whether this family getaway is the stuff of anxiety dreams or Bluebeard nightmares. The Only One Left by Riley Sager. At 17, Lenora Hope hung her sister with a rope. When Kit is hired as a caregiver for the lone survivor and prime suspect of a decades-old family massacre, she discovers that the morbid schoolyard rhyme she grew up with may not tell the whole story. Another vivid female narrator from bestseller Riley Sager, a male author with a gender-neutral pseudonym, whose signature corkscrew plots keep twisting until the last cutting sentence. When in Rome by Liam Callanan. Claire arrives in Rome on a work assignment and feels promptly jolted awake. The coffee is zesty, the vegetables have verve, and Claire's midlife questions about living a life of meaning feel more urgent than ever. What follows Claire to the Eternal City is not just her old attraction toward the simplicity of convent life, but an old flame. Callanan's Claire is a soulful seeker, and his Rome a sensory pleasure. Romantic Comedy by Curtis Sittenfield. Sittenfield's latest is a love letter to a certain Saturday night sketch comedy show, here called The Night Owls. For Sally Mills, being a writer on TNO is like winning the lottery every day. But when a celebrity guest host falls for her, her insecurity won't let her accept his affections. It takes a pandemic to bring her around. Packed with A1 comic banter and hilarious behind-the-scenes accounts of pitch meetings, run-throughs, and after-parties. Happy Place by Emily Henry. The author of Beach Read and People We Meet on Vacation turns the classic rom-com trope of forbidden love on its head with this tale of heartbreak. For one final trip to coastal Maine, Wynne and Harriet decide to keep their recent breakup secret from their close-knit friend group. With tender insight and quick wit, Henry delivers Prosecco and sea breezes alongside startling meditations on friendship, loss, and adulthood. Hestia Strikes a Match by Christine Grillo. Imagine the challenges of midlife dating just a smidge in the future in an America torn by a second civil war. Hestia works at a retirement village where the body wisdom of her 80-something best friend keeps her going through travails on the apps, at the bar, and on the troubled streets. As she learns, UN peacekeepers know how to party, and Tai Chi instructors don't always go with the flow. Steamy, smart, and hilarious. Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune. At 32, Fern Brookbanks has escaped the family-owned resort on Lake Muskoka, where she grew up and has a dream of opening a coffee shop in Toronto. When her mother suddenly dies, leaving Fern the resort, which comes complete with two former boyfriends involved in its management. One of them stood her up 10 years ago and has been on her mind ever since. This witty Canadian romance is an escapist pleasure. The Great Reclamation by Rachel Heng. In 1940 Singapore, young Ah Boon goes out fishing with his pa and leads him to a mysterious island where the fish run denser than their nets can carry. This ushers in a time of prosperity for the village and great happiness for Ah Boon and his beloved friend, Sik Mei. Then war arrives, the Japanese occupation begins, and nothing, not even the land itself, is ever the same. Hula by Jasmine Iolani Hakes. Dedicated to preserving the heritage of the people of Hilo, Hawaii, family matriarch Hulali is troubled when her runaway daughter Laka comes home with a pale newborn. Later, this baby grows up into a child who longs to heal the family's rifts through the rituals that her mother once loved. This debut novel moves with graceful power and sings with a voice as spellbinding as the rolling surf. American Ending by Mary Kay Zuravleff. It's small acts of inventiveness, generosity, and love that keep individuals going when hard times close in. This is the wisdom and warmth of American Ending, which resurrects a community of immigrants from a century ago in a magical living detail to tell a story that rings true in the present. The fiery heroine Yelena is especially unforgettable as she builds a life in a country that feels by turns inhospitable and rich with untapped promise. The Dead Are Gods by Irene Carson. The author and her best friend Larissa were a magical pair, gorgeous, super smart black models who shared a London flat, a dazzling nightlife, and a zillion loving texts and emails. But somehow, Irene had no idea Larissa was involved with heroin, and now she can't stop wondering how she missed it, striking a deeply resonant chord for anyone who has experienced the obsessive self-searching that often accompanies a sudden loss. Getting Out of Saigon by Ralph White. In April 1975, 27-year-old White was working as a banker in Bangkok when he received orders to close the Chase branch in Saigon. One little problem. The city was about to fall to the North Vietnamese, meaning terrible things for employees of American companies. Lucky for the 113 locals involved, White was crazy enough to think he could save them. An edge-of-your-seat, too-insane-not-to-be-true story. Don't Call Me Home by Alexander Otter. The author's mother was the larger-than-life Warhol superstar Viva, and this memoir of her roller coaster childhood, growing up at the Chelsea Hotel, making the scene as a teen in 80s Manhattan, regularly visiting her mother's wealthy, bickering family in Quebec, is the best kind of train wreck. This near-mythic past is intercut with scenes from the present as the aging diva descends on the author's family in Philadelphia. Our next article by Lane Dalfin is titled, I Had a Scary Dream That I Fell Off a Boat. What does this mean? I had a very scary dream where I fell off a boat into the back, landing where the engine is and water shoots out. I almost got taken under the boat and thought I was going to get chopped up by the engine. What does this mean? Signed, Falling In. Dear Falling In, I'll begin by agreeing with you. This for certain is a scary dream. Looking at the plot instead of the feelings first, can you think of a recent incident in which you fell into some situation? One example might be if you were watching some people have an argument and couldn't resist expressing your opinion. If you got more than you bargained for, that would reflect your falling into a situation in which you also fell into almost being hurt. Perhaps you weren't actually joining an argument. Maybe you were simply responding to someone else's opinion by expressing your own, resulting in you or your ideas or both getting chopped up. In either of these cases, you might have been expecting a pretty mild response, but fallen in with a situation and perhaps a person that are both emotionally charged. A scenario like this one helps reveal the potentially scary consequences of expressing yourself. Alternatively, could you be discussing a recent work situation where you may have suddenly found yourself doing a task you don't feel confident about accomplishing? You can look for a situation that is so emotionally charged that you either are in a position to be personally affected or one in which you feel that way. Whatever the circumstance, your dream is reflecting, the consequences seem quite alarming to you. Emotions like these remind me of family business situations in which a person can get cut out or, as you say, chopped up by the engine. The scene of this dream suggests another possibility. Did you recently fall for a person, hook, line, and sinker? How you created this dire scene inspires me to ask if perhaps you have feelings for someone who has the dangerous potential to metaphorically suck you underwater. This dream scenario may reflect a knowledge that someone is an alcoholic, drug abuser, or cheater, and you are falling in while ignoring these facts. This begs the question if you have already fallen in, or if the dream is here to grab your attention and stop the fall in its tracks. Another question begging to be asked is if you have expressed your worry and fear in the waking life event that triggered this dream. I'm asking because often we find the solution to a dream by noting what's missing. In this dream, you describe a circumstance that happened very quickly and, most importantly, considering the proximity to the blades, needs your immediate attention or, better said, requires immediate help. Yet in the dream, even though you thought you were going to get chopped up by the engine, you aren't screaming for help. Since your dreams are a conversation you have with yourself in your sleep while your resistance is down, they often forcefully express the feelings you are holding back in your waking life. If you find yourself in a stressful waking situation and aren't expressing your feelings, your dream may create a dire situation such as this one in order to encourage and inspire your voice. Consider discussing the matter with a friend or family member you trust before the situation leaves you feeling too broken up. The main message here is to take action and quickly. Finally, the fact that you say you almost got taken under the boat suggests you aren't yet feeling totally submerged and drowning in whatever your situation. It implies that you are still in the process, so it's not too late to work at getting yourself out. There's hope here that you will jump instead of falling in to help yourself out. Our next article is titled Oprah's Favorite First Lines from Her 100 Book Club Picks. Nothing jumpstarts a great read better than an opening sentence. I just love an opening sentence that grabs your attention, said Oprah. After 27 years and 100 books, here are some of the most intriguing, most insightful, and most unforgettable. There are two kinds of people in the world, those who live at home and those who don't. An American Marriage by Tayari Jones, book club pick number 78. First, I got myself born. Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver, book club pick number 98. Ruby Bell was a constant reminder of what could befall a woman whose shoes were too high. Ruby by Cynthia Bond, book club pick number 74. There's no way to know the exact second your life changes forever. The Sun Does Shine, How I Found Life and Freedom on Death Row by Anthony Ray Hinton, book club pick number 79. I spent much of my childhood listening to the sound of striving. Becoming by Michelle Obama, book club pick number 80. There was a time in Africa that people could fly. The Invention of Wings by Sue Monk Kidd, book club pick number 73. On the morning of her ninth birthday, the day after Madame Francoise d'Urban slapped her, Suzette peed on the rose bushes. Cane River by Lolita Tademi, book club pick number 44. They shoot the white girl first. With the rest, they can take their time. Paradise by Toni Morrison, book club pick number 15. All happy families are alike. Each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy, book club pick number 53. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief. It was the epic of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was a season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven. We were all going direct the other way. In short, the period was so far like the present period that some of its noisiest authorities insisted on its being received, for good or for evil, in the superlative degree of comparison only. A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, book club pick number 70. Since 1996, Oprah's Book Club has selected books that engender conversation, spark enlightenment, help launch emerging authors, and reacquaint us with the already prominent. The goal? To connect readers around a community of fellow bibliophiles. Listen only. A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, book club pick number 70. Since 1996, Oprah's Book Club has selected books that engender conversation, spark enlightenment, help launch emerging authors, and reacquaint us with the already prominent. The goal? To connect readers around a community of fellow bibliophiles. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Brandi Spragata, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.